A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you feel like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things you love are checked by experts. And not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real, hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
We felt it was quite fascinating that you can pick the top 20, and this is to be fair, listed companies, and they do 97% of the economic profit pool of the industry. So you could shut down the rest and the profit of the industry wouldn't change.
How does that happen that so few companies generate so much value?
There's clearly a luxury play that gets you into the top 20 players. And there is also a value discount play to get you there.
Let's talk about the global economy in general next year. What are your key observations?
There is still a high level of uncertainty out there in the industry, and which is not a surprise. We just look at the political developments in the United States, the trade tensions with China, Brexit in Europe, economic problems in Italy. You know, a lot of the core markets are affected.
Hi, this is Imran Ahmed, founder and CEO of The Business of Fashion. This week on the BOF podcast, we're bringing you a special conversation I had with Achim Berg, senior partner at McKinsey & Company, about the state of fashion 2019, our annual report that helps you understand everything you need to know about what's going on in the fashion business next year. In case you're interested in a deeper look at the state of fashion 2019, we'll include a link in the episode notes to download the report and view a video that summarizes the 10 trends that will shape fashion next year. So here's my conversation with Achim from earlier this week.
I wanted to start just by giving you some quick fire points on what we have been finding to be some of the key ideas, themes, and topics for the state of fashion in 2019. We are calling 2019 a year of awakening for the fashion industry, a year of an urgent awakening. There is the emergence of a new paradigm where old rules no longer work. There's an increased need for companies to move fast and be nimble and deal with all of the rapidly changing consumer demands led by millennials and Gen Z. At the same time, there are interesting things to be cautious about. There's dangers that continue to lurk around the corner. So we need to kind of shock-proof our companies and brands and create productivity enhancements to ensure we can weather the possible storms that are ahead. So with that, Achim, I just wanted to start by taking your temperature on There were basically three big bullet points that we want to cover today. One is just an overall outlook on the growth of the market. The second is to discuss what we're calling the super winners. These are 20 companies dominating value creation in fashion. And the third is to do a deep dive on the core industry trends that we are forecasting for next year. So let's start with the first one. As we look ahead to the outlook for 2019, what do our BOF professional members need to know about the fashion industry in 2019 when it comes to growth?
So I think as every year we've surveyed the BOF 500, we've added a long list of McKinsey clients, we asked our own experts. So this is our attempt to get the temperature, and we believe that after a relatively strong year in 2018, which even turned out a bit stronger than what we thought in the beginning, 4 to 5% of growth overall, and overall means, across all price points, from discount to luxury, across all product categories, from accessories to apparel, and also across all geographies. We believe growth will soften slightly down to 3.5 to 4.5%. So let's put that into perspective. The long year trend was around 5.5%. So we are below what we've seen over the last, 10, 15 years. Compared to 2016, where we only had 1.5%, this is a significant, improvement. But it is below that average. So as you said, I think at the beginning, there's a lot of reasons why one could worry. You look at the stock market, you look at trade tensions, you look at Brexit, you look at a lot of companies that started to struggle. So we feel there is growth for sure. It's gonna be slightly less than this year, hopefully, but it's not taking any big events into account. So crashing out of the European Union for the UK would have an impact for sure. That is bigger than what we have estimated here.
Okay. Let's double click on that a bit, because the 4.5 to 5.5 or the 4 to 5% growth for 2019, actually when you kind of cut things up by geography and by category and by kind of market positioning, there's a kind of noticeable difference. Can you kind of walk us through the geographic and...
No, absolutely. So I think interesting part is, and that's not different to last year, growth comes from the emerging markets. All the, so-called developed markets, have rather, limited growth. We're talking here about North America, that's even the bigger one, 2.5 to 3.5%. We look at the mature part of Europe, which is 1.5 to 2.5. This is basically inflation, or slightly above inflation. Also Middle East, Africa, 3 to 4%. The real growth happens in Asia Pacific emerging, so it's not including Japan and Korea, where we think 6.5 to 7.5%, also above the historical average. We see growth happening in the emerging parts of Europe, and we also see it in Latin America. So in that sense, I think not really a surprise.
That seems pretty obvious, right?
Pretty obvious.
So what was surprising in there for you?
I think US, I think is expected to be a bit better. We also were cautious last year. So I think that is a bit the surprise. And then obviously your mature part of Europe, 1.5 to 2.5, that is pretty low.
Yeah.
And that that means if you want to grow, you have to be in the emerging parts and in the developing and growing parts of the fashion world.
Right. And then when it comes to like product categories, so we covered apparel, footwear, sportswear, and other categories, where is the growth coming from there?
Yeah, unfortunately, also no big surprises here.
Okay.
That's the effect of doing the report now for the third time. There is some things that seems to be given. And I think sportswear is still strong, not as strong as it used to be. It was double digit, 2-3 years back, but it's still 6-7%. So clearly above the average, clearly above the long-term average. It's one of the growth engines of the industry. And in that sense, as I said, not really surprising because that hadn't fundamentally changed. What has changed a bit is the polarization when you look at value segments.
Yeah.
So we've seen that before, but it's becoming stronger and stronger in a way. We see that discount and value is benefiting, and that also luxury and affordable luxury is benefiting. So we see 5 to 6% in value, which is a lot driven by, you know, growing middle class in a lot of the emerging markets that get access to apparel and to fashion and to buy into it. But we also see that luxury, you know, is doing well, and that in, you know, certain pockets like the United States or North America in a broader sense. So that continues. What is shrinking, you know, is the mid-market. So
is it shrinking or growing less quickly?
Okay, that's very precise.
Right.
So, so it's you're right. It's still 1.5 to 2.5%. So it's not shrinking. But if you take inflation into account, then we are almost shrinking.
Right.
Yeah. So I think not almost. Globally, inflation will be higher than 1.5 or 2%.
Sure.
So in that sense, this is pretty much flat. But that, I think that also is reflected in the broader McKinsey Global Fashion Index. So if we look at the winners and losers, you also see that polarization happening. Yeah.
So when you think about the difference, just so our listeners out there can understand, what's the difference between like value and discount? And what's the difference between affordable luxury and luxury and the way you guys think about that?
So the way we do that, and we call it, you know, we invented that categorization because the industry as such, you know, didn't have that. So everybody has a slightly different cut. Every, you know, analyst is using a different one. Every, you know, publication is using a different one. The way we do it is we look at price points in certain categories. So we have some, you know, statistically relevant categories, let's say denim. And then we look what is the average price that you have, you know, across the full spectrum of companies. And let's name some examples. That starts with Primark in the discount area. That is H&M in in the value. That is Esprit in the mid-market. That is Tommy Hilfiger in premium bridge. That is Tory Burch in affordable luxury. And that is Gucci in luxury.
Okay.
So that's the different cuts. And then we, you know, we try to understand how our volume's developing along those groups.
Okay. So overall, just to sum up, growth will continue widely in 2019. It'll be slightly slower than the growth we've been experiencing in 2018. But that growth is really polarized into two core segments of the market, which is right at the top in the luxury segment, an affordable luxury segment, and then right at the bottom in discount and value. And it's really the middle market that's suffering the most.
And it is also polarized in geographies because it, you know, growth happens in the emerging markets, and there's, you know, far less growth in the developed ones.
Okay. The other thing that we revealed in the State of Fashion 2019 is the idea of the super winners. And for 3 years now, we've been talking about these companies, 20 companies that dominate the creation of value. And before we start discussing the companies in particular, I wanted to understand, when you talk about economic profit, which is a measure that you guys have used in this McKinsey Global Fashion Index to really identify these super winners, in very layman's terms, what is economic profit?
We take the net profit and we deduct the taxes and we deduct the cost of the working capital.
Okay.
So which, you know, also means we're not only looking at, you know, the EBITDA, but we want to understand who generates profit on top of the capital that they use for generating that profit. So if you are in a, you know, high capex, you know, play and you have, you know, low profits, you know, you might even destroy value.
Mm-hmm.
If you use very limited capex and you have high profits, you know, you're obviously doing very well.
Okay. And so it's also about productivity.
Absolutely.
Right.
So, and we do that based on a database that we've developed now over the 3 years. It's more than 550 companies. Roughly 350 are listed. Some 200 are private companies, but that still disclose numbers or figures because they have to in their legislations. And we collect that, and it's a bit like a puzzle. We collect top line, bottom line figures, and we run then different kinds of analysis.
Okay. So as we look at this list of companies, this year, there's these 20 companies that are generating about 98% of the economic profit. 97% of the economic profit. How does that happen that so few companies generate so much value?
It's pretty stunning, to be honest. It's stunning. I think what we did last year and the year before, and I think some of who are listening in might recall that we looked at the top 20%, we looked then at the next 60% and at the bottom 20%. And already at that point, we felt this is pretty polarized because the top 20% last year were generating 144% of the value creation, and the rest was basically destroying the rest, or it was even destroying more than they did. So in the end, it's 100, obviously, as a pool. This year, we wanted to really understand what's happening in the top 20%. And roughly, this is top 20 is 110 companies. So we looked into the different players, and we realized that the really interesting number is not the top 20%, but the top 20 players. And that's what we call the super winners. And Inditex is leading the list, and they have an economic profit of more than $4 billion. $4 billion.
Wow.
US dollars as economic profit. It's not the turnover. Yeah. Number 20 on that list is Burberry, still doing $446 million. And then you have a lot of the usual suspects in between: Nike on 2, LVMH on 3. But you also see, TJ Maxx, you see Ross. So I think there is certain patterns that we can identify. So there's clearly a luxury play that gets you into the top 20 players. And there is also a value discount play to get you there. We recognize, not surprisingly, that the mid-market is under-indexed.
Sure.
Yeah? Department stores are under-indexed.
Sure.
Asian players are under-indexed. E-commerce, pure plays are under-indexed. Actually, they are not even in there. Yeah. So, and there's, of course, a lot of reasons for that. But we felt it was quite fascinating that you can pick the top 20, and this is, to be fair, listed companies. And they do 97% of the economic profit pool of the industry. So you could shut down the rest. Yeah, the rest from our sample, but also a larger part that is not in the sample and out there. And the profit of the industry wouldn't change.
That's really stunning, as you said earlier. What I found puzzling when I looked at this list is there are companies on here that when you read The Business of Fashion are not performing well according to the market. So, you read these stories about Gap shutting down tons of stores or Burberry not meeting investor expectations. How do you explain, or L Brands, for example, how do you explain why brands like that, even with the struggles that they're going through, are still, on this list of super winners?
So I think if you take the two US example, that is obviously very big businesses.
Gap and L Brands.
That's very big businesses, and if you and they are profitable, and they are not that capital intense than other businesses, so they still outperform larger parts of the market.
And that's, they might actually be removing costs from their business by shutting down stores and stuff.
Exactly, and I think that is triggering an interesting discussion because it's not only about the EBITDA and. But it's in the end about the cash flow you generate, and it's about how capital intense your operations are.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Have you ever owned something that inspired you to up your game? For me, I got a chef-grade range recently, and now I'm cooking new things every single night. Seriously, no cuisine is off limits. The point is, when we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. I can picture myself with a car full of groceries, cruising down the highway, soaking up the sun with the available dynamic sky panorama glass roof. Ugh, pure bliss. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX. Luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you feel like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things you love are checked by experts. And not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff, with real, hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Mm-hmm. How would this, given everything that's gone on in the market, how would this list have looked like 10 years ago?
Well, we actually looked into that.
Yeah.
So, and it's quite stunning. It's a bit what you would expect, you know. You're missing department stores, mm-hmm. you know, on that list. There were department stores on that list. You are missing certain mid-market players that were very successful and had a high, you know, economic profit.
Like Coach or Michael Kors. Michael Kors is on this list.
Michael Kors is
down
on the list, but you know, I was more thinking about mid-market department stores in the United
right.
States.
Okay.
So. Also in Europe, I think there is a lot of those plays where you see that, you know, consumer demand has changed, that the industry has changed, that, you know, sportswear is the opposite. You see Nike and Adidas on that list. And well, this is not surprising because we just spoke about the high growth rates in athleisure and in sportswear.
Sure.
And we all had, could see how they were thriving over the last couple of years.
Right. Well, what I love about this list for everyone that's listening is that it really gives you a sense of how broad-based the State of Fashion report is, because, you know, there are obviously lots of reports that try to understand the fashion industry, but when we set out to build and create this report, we wanted to really have the ultimate, complete overview of the entire industry from discount all the way to luxury, across all of the different segments. So you really get a sense, and I think, you know, the fashion industry, according to our report, is worth more than like $2.5 trillion globally. So this is a big industry.
Absolutely.
Which kind of brings us to our third discussion point of the day, which is the key industry trends. So each year, as a team, McKinsey and the Business of Fashion, we put our heads together and we really think about the things that we're observing in the market, the conversations that we're having with key executives in the industry, the things that are starting to bubble up as important topics for us to think about as we move into the future and as we move into the year to come. So we have 10 trends roughly, and they're split up into three groups: the global economy, consumer shifts, and the fashion system. Maybe Akin, we can discuss the global economy first. We have, you know, caution ahead because, you know, there's these downward movements in economic indicators, as you were mentioning earlier. Yeah. There's the ascent of India. And there's trade 2.0, which is this idea of like planning for potential shakeups in value chains. Let's talk about the global economy in general next year. What are your key observations in terms of what we took away from the survey? I mean, we surveyed almost 500 people for this report.
Yeah. Now, I think as in previous years, there is still a high level of uncertainty out there in the industry, and which is not a surprise. I think if we just look at the political developments in the United States, the trade tensions with China, look at Brexit in Europe, we look at economic problems in Italy, a lot of the core markets are affected, and therefore it's very hard to make forecasts, but it's also very hard to prepare for that. And I think that's a bit why we believe that trend number three, the trade 2.0, is relevant. Yeah? We have plenty of discussions with clients about, what does it mean for China now? Will they really impose, 25% duties? We all understand it's not that easy to move volumes out of China and into other geographies. East Africa is a dream, but that will take years and years and years to become, relevant in terms of size. If the economic downturn, would hit us faster, how would you need to prepare for that from a cost perspective? So I think, yes, we've seen that things can turn out better than we thought. That's true for 2018. We were a bit more skeptical if we look at last year's forecasts. But I think 2019, for good reasons, means you need to be a bit cautious,
right?
Yeah, and therefore prepare for that. And that's what we recognize with a lot of our clients, who now take a look at, their sourcing setup. They take a look at their supply chain setup. They take a look at their general cost setup, SG&A, they try to strengthen the brand and try to make the right investments into the brand. So sure. I think that is the general view that we see. I think India, you are much better prepared and positioned than me to talk about that. Why is India relevant in 19? Because I think we heard that before, and I think we even discussed it at Voices.
Yeah. Well, I think India has been lurking in the background as a big opportunity for a while by the sheer force of the demographics, 1.3 billion people, and the shift from kind of rural to urban population and the resulting kind of moving out of poverty, essentially. You have a growth of this like middle class. The thing that's held the Indian market back for a long time is that there's a big informal apparel sector in India. Everybody has a tailor, everybody, gets their own clothes made.
We and used to have that in Europe as well.
Yeah. And there's been a traditional lack of retail infrastructure. So even if you were a big brand and you wanted to set up shop in India, it was hard to find suitable places. And that was further complicated by a regulatory environment where, you weren't able to go in and set up 100% of your own business. You had to find a local partner. So for all of these reasons and the complexity of the Indian consumer mindset, it's very difficult for brands to really find a way of making an impact in India. But a lot of those things have now changed. And I think probably the single most important factor has been technology. So you have this smartphone. We had speakers on stage at Voices talking about the fact that in a few years, there's gonna be something like 800 or 900 million people in India with smartphones. And these people have, it's oftentimes their first computing device that they've had. And all of a sudden, everything you want to do, payments or even if you don't understand, you're not a literate person, you can, you know, with the technologies that are now available, you can speak to your phone and tell them what you want, as you know, right?
But do you think the Indian consumer is, you know, similar to the Chinese consumer, and the kind of development we've seen in China will now replicate in India?
Well, I think what's similar is that consumers everywhere have access to the same information. And so in addition to being kind of emboldened with technology, which means you could just, instead of having to go in a retail store, you can buy it on Amazon or Flipkart or any number of these e-commerce sites that are exploding in India, you also have access to brand information. So, I mean, I think the Chinese story is a different one because, you know, there is a very strong local dress and tradition of dress in India, for especially for formal occasions. There's this fusion of Indian aesthetics with Western aesthetics, which you don't really see in China. But what's clear is when you have an economy that's growing at something, I mean, in the video it says, you know, GDP growth in India will be, you know, 8% and for the next 5 years. That makes India the fastest growing major economy in the world. That's, and you have this like hugely growing, you know, middle class. So I think for all of those reasons, you know, the changing, you know, demographics, the rise of technology and shifting consumer tastes, I think the Indian opportunity is very interesting.
Indeed.
So the next bucket that's worth discussing is, you know, broader consumer shifts that we're witnessing. And in this category, we have the end of ownership. We have this thing we call getting woke, which is about kind of younger consumers' interest in social causes. We have now or never, which is about, you know, making purchase journeys easier. And this idea of radical transparency and kind of providing more, you know, clarity and transparency to the consumer. So as you think about these consumer shifts, Achim, which ones are you most excited about as you think about
I think there's a big surprise to me, and there is some that I'm, you know, more excited about. And I think the big surprise to me is end of ownership. And that was, I recall when we discussed that with the team, we said, oh, well, you know, is that true? You know, is there real evidence that this is now relevant and will become even more relevant?
So what convinced you?
I think the data in the end.
Yeah.
If you just look at the size of some of those companies, if you look at, you know, also some of them, the consumer research that shows that there's younger consumers out there that are more open, you know, to hiring fashion products or, you know, to reusing fashion products. I think that convinced me in the end. And the data is relatively straightforward. So I think that was the surprise piece to me.
Yeah.
I think woken up is also interesting. You know, it's also kind of, you know, surprising because...
Getting woke. As they say, yeah.
Yeah. So because that is, you know, a brand takes a stance on a political topic. And we've seen that with Nike and Kaepernick. We've seen that, you know, with Levi's, you know, asking everybody to go for, you know, and to vote. But we also see that in Europe. And I think it's interesting in that respect because for many, many years, this was kind of the 101 playbook of marketing is stay out of all of that. Yeah, don't be controversial. Don't get caught in a public debate. Don't take...
Sure.
You know, a position. And now we see that, you know, brands become more brave and that also the consumers, you know, support that, like that, requested even, that you have a stance and that you cannot, you know, shy away from having a position.
I think one needs to be very careful with this trend, though, because just as consumers are looking for brands that are more purpose-driven, they're very perceptive and aware of brands that are just doing it as an economic profit motivated activity, as opposed to something that is genuinely connected with what the brand stands for.
Agreed.
And so, you know, this was something that also came up on the Voices stage. It's like, you don't do this stuff just to, you know, to make more money or to grow your business. You do this stuff because it's connected deeply to the kind of soul and purpose of your brand. And so where it works really well is when the causes that brands are getting behind are ones that the consumer genuinely can see is inherently part of that brand's
Take Patagonia handing back the tax benefits they had. I think that's a kind of a statement. But I'm with you. I think there's a risk yet because, you know, the consumer perspective might change. The consumer might have the impression that this is a kind of the equivalent of greenwashing. Mm-hmm. And you just do it, for the wrong reasons. So, I think, but it's going to be interesting to see how that turns out in 2019.
Yeah.
Okay, and then the final bucket here is around the fashion system. And we have three broad trends here. One is around self-disruption, which is like traditional brands kind of breaking down their old ways of doing things and kind of reinventing themselves. The digital land grab, which is, the skepticism and hesitation and cautiousness that might have kind of held the industry back when it came to digital adoption in the early years, that's completely gone away. And now you see this like massive land grab going on for people who are trying to get ahead. And then this idea of on demand, which is like the power of automation and data to help, provide, what people call made to order or on demand production. So the one here that I really want to click on here, Achim, is self-disrupt. I mean, what are brands that you feel have taken this tack and why have they been successful?
I think the most obvious ones are, Gucci and Balenciaga, in the luxury space, where I think we've seen a paradigm for many, many years that was, if it is about luxury, it's about heritage, it's about workmanship, it's about how old you are, it's about, having specific technologies that you own in producing luxury products. And I think the management at Gucci has been brave enough to position, slightly differently and to go for a more millennial consumer, to become much more fashionable, to also become much more edgy. And now, of course, everybody, is looking into that. Everybody is looking into street style. Everybody is looking into sneakers. So in that sense, I think people have realized that, in particular, if you have a certain size of business and if you have a certain market share, among your competition, that you really need to, you need to push a bit harder and you need to take some risks in order to reinvent yourself.
Okay.
Because otherwise, the pure plays and the startups and the small ones will disrupt the place for you.
Okay.
Can you just tell me a little bit about what you think is, the kind of role of, the luxury group now? Because if you think about, Richemont and Kering and LVMH, what you were saying, you think that, they're all appearing on the super winners list except for Richemont. Like, why are groups still relevant?
I think a bit to what I tried to explain beforehand, there is, certain requirements in the growth path of a luxury brand.
Yeah.
And in some geographies like the UK, it is difficult to get the financing. It's different to Italy. In Italy, it's much more family-owned. There's much more, support there. But in the UK, a lot of the players are too small for private equity. But they still need to have the expertise. They need to have the talent and so on. And I'm with you. I think there was a play to take smaller brands, to nurture them, to grow them. Frankly, we also thought 2-3 years back that growth of the conglomerates would rather come from the portfolio of smaller brands than from the big ones. I think there's few people in the industry that thought you could, bring Gucci to those growth levels and to to maintain that. Frankly, that's also going to be a challenge going forward. Yeah, can you do that? On the other hand, those conglomerates have become so big now that you need a lot of small brands, in order to, make the needle move. So, and in that sense, I think we probably see some of the developments here.
Okay.
Thank you, Achim, for joining us.
Pleasure.
If you'd like to download the full State of Fashion 2019, you can find an easy link on the Business of Fashion, at businessoffashion.com, or also at McKinsey.com. The full report is here. It is quite an expansive piece of analysis, so make sure you have a look at it. We're really proud of the work we do every year on this report with McKinsey. It certainly helps us as we think about next year, and I'm sure it will help all of you as well. So have a lovely afternoon, evening, or morning, wherever you are in the world, and we will see you next time for BOF Professional Live.
Thanks a lot for joining us, and looking forward to have the same discussion in 1 year's time.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You know that's the sound of another sale on your online Shopify store. But did you know Shopify powers selling in person, too? That's right. Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/BOF, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/BOF to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/BOF.
Have you ever owned something that inspired you to up your game? For me, I got a chef-grade range recently, and now I'm cooking new things every single night. Seriously, no cuisine is off limits. The point is, when we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. I can picture myself with a car full of groceries, cruising down the highway, soaking up the sun with the available dynamic sky panorama glass roof. Ugh, pure bliss. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX. Luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.